This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.
Next up on Off Duty, talking chocolate with the master of confection.
Helping you enjoy the finer points of food and drink. This is Off Duty from the Wall Street Journal.
I love that new intro. Hello and welcome to the Off Duty podcast, where we talk about all things food and drink. I'm Kevin Sintemong.
And I'm Beth Cracklauer.
Beth, I know from your Instagram feed that you're out in California this week doing some eating and drinking, aren't you?
I sure am. I'm calling into the studio today from the Napa Valley, where it's exactly as gorgeous right now as you imagine. And I'm eating incredibly well. Californians eat better than us.
They've figured it out, you know?
Yeah, I keep getting served plates full of flowers. Pretty flowers tasty, too.
That you can
I'm eating like a little wood nymph or something.
Edible flowers. Okay.
Beautiful.
Yeah, they don't do that out here in New York. There are no food carts in Midtown serving edible flowers, unfortunately.
No. You get a hot dog and then a shot of the water that it was cooked in. That's what you get there.
There's a charm to it, though. This week, we have a special guest in the studio who's traveled all the way from California, actually. Speaking of California. Someone who spent years helping people eat in Los Angeles. Eat better in Los Angeles, specifically when it comes to chocolate.
And toffee, and caramel, and pastries, and cookies, and pedophores, and preserves.
Yes, welcome to the podcast, Valerie Gordon of Los Angeles-based Valerie Confection.
Thank you, Kevin. Hi, Beth, how are you?
Hi. I have to tell you, I have been a big fan, ardent admirer of your confections for many years. So the last time I was in L.A., I bought a few jars of the Blenheim apricot preserves to take home with me. And I just, that jam, why is it so good? How do you make it so good?
I have to tell you, that's such a compliment, because the jams that we sell are the one thing where I actually personally make every jar.
Oh, wow.
That
wow.
we sell. Oh. And I can't say that anymore about every piece of chocolate that we sell, thankfully.
But you'd be up all night.
Yeah. Yes. It would be impossible.
Yes. There's something incredibly personal about the jam. Blenheim apricots are a spectacular fruit, and they are considered the queen of apricots, and they have an incredibly short growing season and a really complex flavor.
Yeah.
And there's sort of like a signature creaminess to the flavor. And the only thing that I add to that jam is sugar. So it's just apricot and sugar, and that's it.
Wow.
Yeah.
It tastes like a totally different fruit to me. This is not like your Smucker's apricot jam. It's like complex and soft. It's kind of soft and round and so good.
And really, and you get all sorts of different notes in that jam. So I really like, I think the key to that particular jam is not doing too much to it and really getting out as much of the fruit flavor as you can during the jam process.
Well, that sounds extremely Californian. And this sort of ingredient focus, don't mess with it too much. Mm-hmm. Let these beautiful ingredients speak for themselves. Do you think that's accurate to say that, you know, you make sweets in a Californian way? Or what other things would you say have shaped the way you approach making this stuff?
Yeah, I always say that my approach to both sweet and savory food is incredibly Californian and vaguely French. so there's definitely, I'm a bit of a Francophile, and there's a bit of just French inspiration in a lot of what I do, but then it's very much imbued with, you know, a local approach, if you will. I really try to let things taste like their ingredient, and I want them to look like food also, which sometimes it doesn't follow along with dessert trends in particular. Like, you definitely see a lot of desserts where you're like, what is that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I like come from outer space.
Yeah, I like cake to look like cake. I like chocolate to look like chocolate.
So, concept.
Yeah, I like to sort of leave things alone a little bit. And it sounds a little cheesy, but I always look for the narrative in whether it's a piece of chocolate or a jam or a salad, where you get a beginning and a middle and an end to the flavors. Mm-hmm. And when you get sort of that little story happen, that's when I know to step away.
Right, right. Now, how did you get started on this path? Did you train as a pastry chef?
No, not at all. Well, personally, I trained as a pastry chef. Uh-huh. I started baking when I was 8 years old. And I was a latchkey kid who really liked food. So I was left to my own devices quite a bit. And I was just kind of, I had a little bit of a sense of industry around just making things that I wanted to eat. So,
right. That's always a good thing.
And a big part of baking for me was always this idea of sharing. So I really like to make things and give them to people, which I started doing, I would say, in about the third grade. I would make chocolate chip cookies once a week and bring them to school the next day and hand them out to my friends.
Uh-huh.
And we would eat them surreptitiously at our desks. And that was, like, I would say, you know, the grassroots beginning of what I do.
Right, right.
Which is kind of funny.
Very, yeah. You learn to buy your friends love early on.
Really exactly. Admirable. I'm there, so there. Going to your birthday party. Okay, Sally? Seriously, Sally.
And now here you are.
You want the cookie.
Now, people all over the country, not just in L.A., are hooked on your cookies, on your sweets. How many pounds of butter would you say you go through in a week?
That's a hard question. We have three locations now, uh-huh. which is kind of fun. At our main location, we'd use different types of butter for different things, which mm-hmm. is sort of interesting. I like to use a higher fat butter for toffee and caramel in particular. And then we use just sort of a standard unsalted butter for all of our baked goods. Oh, God. Cases. I mean, during like peak season for us is Thanksgiving through Christmas, and we get daily deliveries of butter because we run out of storage space.
Uh-huh.
So, we literally probably get 2 to 3 cases a day of butter
right.
just
wow.
at that location. That just, I mean, just churn it.
No. Yeah. Well, you need all of that butter.
And butter's important. I'm a firm believer in just really using a lot of fat in dessert. I am.
Sure.
I just think fat is the best conduit for flavor, and it's how you get that deep level of deliciousness.
Right. And it's a pretty big collection of sweets. You know, it's from candies to cookies to pies even. Mm-hmm. How did you sort of expand the line over the years?
Well, the line started with this little box that you're looking at uh-huh. here of 6 pieces of toffee.
Okay.
That's what we started with in 2004. And we always knew that we would, and when I say we, I mean myself and my partner, Stan, we always said, okay, at some point we'll start doing cookies, we'll start doing baked goods, things like that. You know, when you start a company, it's sort of like life or being a parent or whatever. You know, you have this vision of how it'll progress mm-hmm. and then things intercede and you start to go in different directions. So we started with toffee. We added petaphors, which you see here, and mm-hmm. you might see an edible flower on that, by the way.
Okay.
And we also expanded to truffles, cookies, and there was this thing called the recession that hit, and that really changed our company quite a bit, and I think, strangely, in a good way.
People were eating because they were depressed, right?
Well, it's, you know, the mainstay of our company in 2008 was shipping product.
Uh-huh.
around the country, and I definitely found that people wanted to ship expensive boxes of chocolates a little bit less
uh-huh.
in 2008 and 2009. So our focus became much more local then, and we started doing these farmers market booths.
Uh-huh.
So that sort of forced me to – that's when I started making jam and packaging it. And it forced me to develop this whole line of pastries. So – and, you know, purchasing direct from farmers and stuff like that. So there was this – for us, there was a very positive outcome to the recession. And it forced a different level of creativity and an expansion of our – goods that wasn't planned.
Mm-hmm.
Then we also do a lot of cakes. I resurrect historic cakes,
uh-huh.
which is a fun project. And then we also have these two cafes where we do full brunch, lunch, breakfast. So we do a lot.
Right, right.
Yeah, we go for it.
Well, I know you have are torturing me, actually, by having some of these things that you make in the studio far thousands of miles away from me.
Yeah, Valerie,
you might as well just go ahead and start eating them, guys.
Yes, there's this
if you have to.
Very plentiful goodie bag here. So
should we text you a picture, Ben?
No, thank you.
I didn't eat breakfast today because I knew I was going to be eating chocolate for breakfast. So, Valerie, what should I start with here?
Why don't you start with, I mean, this has a lot of nuts in it. I'm looking at the Good Mix Bar, and this is our latest collaboration with Commune Design, and this is a super fun chocolate bar. It is intended for adults. And Commune Design, of course, that's a wonderful collective of designers, and they... We do collaborations with them
mm-hmm.
with chocolate, and it is an exploration of design and chocolate. And this is a wonderful chocolate bar that has interior and exterior design.
Yes, it's a beautiful, beautifully designed wrapper, and on the inside is an artfully nude woman on a horse.
Yeah, that's exactly. She looks comfortable, doesn't she?
Yes, she uh-huh. does. She does, absolutely. So that's what you meant by it's a bar for adults. Yes.
Yes. And the Hot Good Mix Bar, of course, has a wonderful image of a gentleman.
Okay.
Yes.
So I chose the heteronormative one.
Yes.
So I'm gonna try a bit of this bar.
Yep.
So there's not what's in it? Well, tell me what's in this.
This bar is packed with some fun ingredients. It has It has sunflower seeds. It has toasted sliced almonds. It has fleur de sel, which is a French sea salt.
Mm-hmm.
It has pumpkin seeds. It just has a ton of ingredients packed into it. So it's kind of like a granola, a chocolatey cocoa-covered granola pressed into 61% chocolate and finished with salt.
Yeah, I mean, I was joking that I was going to be eating chocolate for breakfast, but you could actually kind of eat this for breakfast.
Totally.
It's just chock full of...
So much texture.
Oh, yeah,
yes.
Totally.
There's a lot of texture. There's a lot going on there.
I mean, it would be hard to save this for the reward at the end of the hike. You would just want to kind of eat it.
Well, you need fuel to get up that mountain.
That's the good excuse.
Yeah, I mean, not everyone has a horse at their disposal, like the lovely lady inside. Just jump on.
No, is the other version? Uh-huh. Is it a naked dude also on a horse, or is it a?
It's art. It's not a naked dude, Kevin. This is art that you could hang on your wall, man. Look at him. Oh yeah, there's nothing wrong with that story.
No, that's it is art.
I know.
That's very art.
It's also there's something so happy and youthful.
Yeah, I would say I could show these pictures online, but I can't. I don't think we can. It's a.
You'd be fine.
We're a family site, so we'll just have to talk about it.
Doesn't it make you hungry?
Maybe you can have some artfully placed chocolate bars.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You can do it.
And so next are the.
These are pétifors.
Pétifors, or as we say in Jersey, petit fours.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
What kind do you have? I love the one that you do that has the mint leaf on it. Which ones do you have there?
Yeah, so what should I try?
These are, we have an edible rose here. So since
you're
eating edible flowers on the West Coast, Beth, I feel like Kevin should eat an edible
now
rose
now I feel
here
included,
in studio.
Thanks.
Okay,
yes.
That's the rose petal pétifor. That is our most popular pétifor for sure.
Mm-hmm.
These are all little... four-layer cakes.
Uh-huh.
They're an inch and a quarter square in proportion. And this particular cake has 4 layers of vanilla bean cake, 3 layers of rose petal passion fruit ganache.
Mm-hmm.
It's hand-dipped in white chocolate and topped with a candied rose petal. So we sort of painstakingly candy these fabulous organic, locally grown rose petals by hand, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. And we'd like to put those on pataphores.
Right. This is beautiful.
Just to be really casual.
I almost don't want to eat it because it's so pretty.
Oh, you have to eat it.
What's the best way to attack it here?
Just you insert it in your mouth.
Oh, is that what you?
Totally.
Oh, that's what you do that with petit fours. Okay, all right.
But with your pinky up.
Yes.
Exactly.
Okay. Let me give it a try here. Oh yeah, that's great.
Thank you.
Butter.
Yeah, it's magical. There's butter. A lot of butter in there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun because you get the creaminess and the depth of the vanilla bean juxtaposed with the tartness of passion fruit. And the floral, obviously, is coming from the roses.
So I'm going to eat a bit of the rose here.
Please. It's curiously enjoyable, the candied rose petal. The texture is fun. It's almost like it's like a it has a potato chip quality.
I mean, it tastes exactly like what you would think
a
candied rose petal would taste like.
But it's so crisp, you know what I mean, and delicate.
Just perfumey enough,
but not. I mean, you don't want to put potpourri in your mouth,
right?
And that is the thing about balancing.
Unless you're a 3-year-old child, and
exactly. Yeah. You never want to put anything like that tastes, you know, like bathroom scent.
This is perfect. Yeah, really delicious. Just the right amount of kind of perfumey. Like, I feel like I'm in a field in California.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
In Napa Valley.
But you're not.
Yes.
It's almost time for Beth to start tasting wine.
Thanks, Beth.
It's actually 6:30 in the morning here. Okay, Beth, I think we get a sense now. Thank you.
Yes.
There's
so much more to eat and talk about, though, Beth.
Another time, sequel, when I have some.
Okay.
I would like to know a little bit about, you mentioned these kind of historical cakes you're working on. Can you talk about a few of those and to what end?
Well, right now we have 5 in our collection. It started with the Blum's Coffee Crunch Cake, which is actually a cake that I grew up with. And it is a very emotional cake for people, as are, I think, a lot of these historic desserts, because there's that fabulous thing with sense memory where a flavor, a taste, a food experience that you had during different times in your life, when you taste it again, you really return to that moment. It's, you know, it's the great Proustian cliche, which is so true. And there's also this fabulous thing about cake, which is most people don't have a celebratory cake every day. So you really remember it. It's not like steak. You know what I mean? It's not like pizza. It's a treat, and it's a treat that generally signifies something important in your life or a specific moment in your life. So this collection started with the Blum's Coffee Crunch Cake in 2009 is when this started. And the response was just enormous.
Well, what is the Blum's Coffee Crunch Cake? Like, what era does it come from?
Blum's was a bakery. There were 8 locations in California. The last one closed in the late 70s. So I remember it from my early childhood. And the Blum's Coffee Crunch Cake is a chiffon cake with whipped cream and coffee honeycomb. A number of Asian bakeries sort of co-opted a version of the coffee crunch cake in San Francisco and sort of continued a version of it, although it's a little bit different. And when I was asked to recreate this years ago, it really became this whole journey for me in sort of going back to my childhood and resurfacing this cake that was very, very important in my life. So that came back, and then the response was just, it was overwhelming. And it is a really, it's a specific cake where you get this lovely sort of buoyant chiffon cake and creamy, wonderful, soothing whipped cream and crunchy coffee crunch. And it's texturally, it just, it really jives when you eat it. It's an amazing experience.
So are you relying on sense memory to kind of reverse engineer this? How did you get back to that cake?
That cake was the easiest cake for me because I remembered it. A lot of the cakes that I bring back, I don't remember, and it is actually a very in-depth process that I go through in order to bring the cakes back. I say we get a request for a cake. For instance, the Scandi apple cake was one where we received repeated requests from people who, and this is what happens, you know, people will call and say, you know, I remember this cake. Is there any way you can bring it back? And if we get continual requests for the same cake, then it's like, okay, there's a critical mass on this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then I start to research it. So, you know, the internet, of course, is a fabulous tool where you can pull up various articles and things like that. We also have this amazing menu vault at the Los Angeles Public Library where you can go and find menus and find descriptions. And then I also look at cookbooks of the era where whatever cake it is originated, because you do you definitely see trends in the way recipes come together from the same era.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it might be from a different restaurant, a different bakery, people were doing similar things in the same region, say in the 1950s. You know, you could definitely look at maybe three different cakes from three different restaurants, and they would likely be fairly similar. And then I go to, so I'll sort of see what I can piece together and then start to play a little bit in the kitchen and start to experiment and see, okay, how would this have been done during this time? And once I get to something that seems slightly plausible, I will ask someone to taste it who remembers the cake or the dessert. So I do have a number of people now who have very, very good sense memory for dessert, who remember these desserts, who can guide me a little bit, meaning, no, it was more in this proportion. Well, no, what they did was X, Y, or Z. And so that really is sort of the final piece to all of it. And some of it is just, you know, every dessert that I've brought back so far, I've had very educated tasters who have given me their opinions on it, what needs to change, what was a little different. And on a couple of the, like, for instance, the Brown Derby grapefruit cake. And the Brown Derby was, you know, a very famous restaurant chain in Los Angeles where huge celebrities went, and there was a great architectural look to the Brown Derby where the exterior actually looked like a hat. Mm-hmm. And they did the Brown Derby, and they did this thing called a grapefruit cake. The Brown Derby did publish a cookbook, and so that was sort of an easy one. However, a lot of ingredients in the way we cook has changed a bit in the last 50 years, and so they suggested things like using canned grapefruit and syrup for the grapefruit cake, which I just wouldn't do. So there I take a little bit of liberty because, of course, we get our, you know, in the Southland where we get produce 12 months a year. That's
right.
Kind of fun.
Yeah, it would be pretty perverse.
We'll just strain the syrup out of this deliciousness. So, you know, we use fresh pink grapefruit from the farmer's market that's locally grown. And so that gives it, I think, sort of a more modern feel and a brightness to it that we wouldn't have if we followed the traditional recipe. With the Blum's Coffee Crunch Cake recipe, I took one liberty where I'm half Chinese, and I was very familiar with the way Asian bakeries had sort of altered the original Blum's Coffee Crunch Cake. And the way they altered it was to make the whipped cream coffee flavored. Mm-hmm. And I took that through line with it. And because Blum's actually did a vanilla whipped cream instead. So I have taken small liberties.
Well, yeah, and it's also like you're not just representing the original cake, you're kind of representing the whole history of this cake, and these things evolve over time. That's fascinating.
Very eloquent, Beth. Thank you.
She's a pro.
I know. You go, Beth.
This all happily. But what are you going to make this into a book? I would love to have these recipes.
This is a definitely a larger project that I am working on in various media avenues right now, which is pretty exciting. And I am currently working on three new recipes. And it's a fun thing. You know, we get these requests from customers that are super fun. And what's really, really great is, you know, we get all of these wonderful grandmothers and grandfathers who really want to share these desserts with their grandkids and their children. And we have introduced a whole new generation to the Blum's Coffee Crunch Cake. So it's sort of like this great legacy that is just being continued. And it's incredibly satisfying. And it feels like something that's a larger responsibility sort of in the whole food canon that I've kind of taken on, which is pretty, it's pretty fun.
Ah, that's beautiful. I think there are a few historical recipes in the wonderful book you published a couple of years ago. It's called Sweet. You should definitely check it out, or you can order sweets direct from Valerie's LA kitchen at ValerieConfections.com. Valerie, you are working very hard at making the world a sweeter place, and we are all very grateful for it. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Beth. It was a lot of fun. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks. And that wraps up another off-duty podcast. You can listen to other WSJ podcasts at wsj.com/podcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, and other fine podcast places. And as always, if you like what you've heard, tell a friend.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.